CliffCentral.com.
Yes. You got to this point. This is worth celebrating. I know. We take the small victories, like Thursday. It's a small enough victory, yeah. But we'll take it, right? Mm.
Yeah. Got to take every one.
Every single one. You got to. That's right. And so we've got a lot to tell you about this morning, but we'll get to that in a second. This morning it is me, it is Pumi, it is Mbulelo, but we're in slightly different places today. Whereas I was in Knysna on Monday or Tuesday, both. Whereas Mbulelo was still at the Otter Trail on Sunday. Now he's in Cape Town. Yes, back in Cape Town.
It's grim.
It's grim, is it? So, first of all, poor Pumi had 4 hours of sleep last night because she had to make cupcakes for Kaneho's birthday.
Is that how we're opening
it up? No, well, I feel bad for you because I also had 4 hours of sleep, but I don't have an excuse. You at least were trying to do the right thing. So, poor Pumi was busy making cupcakes for her son's birthday today. So, you're obviously sending the cupcakes to school, right? Anyway, she had...
Well, I still have to ice them, so I'm going to drop them off at school after the show.
Oh, my God. Poor you. You see, even more to do. But this is how... You want to get something done, ask a busy person.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You're living proof of that. So she was up last night. She was up last night.
But we have to accept, guys, that this is also... So probably 636 is when he was born, 14 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's when I entered into this long con. It's a long con. I've been had.
You see, what you've just said is what no parent is allowed to say socially because it's unacceptable. It's you know, you don't dare ever say, oh, my God, I made this terrible deal with myself, and now it's just not... It's not bearing dividends.
Listen. We're in a pandemic now. I think we're in a pandemic now.
Yeah.
We can be honest with each other and ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's important because, you know, everything's upside down. The whole world's upside down.
Leave the bullshit at the door. So Pumi was up late last night doing cupcakes, and then just to add insult to injury, Eskom decides to load shed her as she puts the first pan of cupcakes into the oven. And then she has to wait 2 hours to do the rest of them. You poor woman. And you see why I started with you. You know, I said this yesterday with... we had Trevor Gumby on yesterday who was on...
He was hilarious.
Oh, my God. Did you hear it?
He was hilarious.
But some of the things he says... Like, he made some... Gossy Johnson joke yesterday, which, I mean, I just, you know, if anyone except Trevor said it, I would be horrified and I would be cross at them and I wouldn't ever want them on the show again. But because it's him, he gets away with anything. So he was on yesterday and I said to him, like, this load shedding in the month before elections, when they actually seem to have managed things for the previous 2 months. You know, I know it's small, it's slim pickings, but...
It was 3 months. It was actually 3 months.
3 months.
When I looked at my app, it said 3 months since the last time we were load-shedded. You know what it reminded me of? And it's because I even tweeted about it yesterday, like 2 days ago. You know, Coconut Cows, Lisa Khotlhabi, tweeted. She has this thing that she does Instagram stories on Mondays, and it's always the most horrifying things that ever known to man. I don't know how she comes up with these topics.
Yeah.
But on Monday, the topic was about how badly guys treat you and then not break up with you, just so that you can break up with them, right?
Mm.
And I was horrified at the concepts. I'm still horrified at the concepts. But so many people were responding to it that it must be a thing that people live through. And I was like, what? I feel like that about the Eskom and the government. It's like we're now at that stage of the relationship where they're just treating us so badly. Like,
they
you have
want...
no choice but to break up with them.
Well, either
they just don't care anymore.
Either they've got so much hubris and they're so convinced of their own glory. Because you see these posters. We said yesterday that there aren't any ANC posters out. I got emails and social media from people all over the
country. They're showing you posters.
They showed me. But posters, so the ANC posters have got, it's the same old, same old. They might as well have just used the Jacob Zuma face and then, like, it looks like they did, and they stuck Cyril on top of it. But Cyril's got, like, this In fact, the thing that someone said in the one email is the picture. And
yeah,
either they really just think that people are so dumb that they'll continue to vote for them, which is what a lot of anti-ANC people also think about ANC voters. And I've always defended them and said, not the ANC, but the voters. I always said they're not dumb. They're loyal.
Yeah.
They're motivated by different things. But maybe the ANC actually thinks they're dumb, like the people who are anti-ANC. Or, as you say, Pumi, it's just an abusive relationship where they see it for what it is. And there's so much cynicism now baked into the political pie that they're going to see how far they can push you. They're going to actually see what they can do to you, like an abusive husband or wife. They're going to go, all right, as long as I'm going to show you how bad this relationship can get. Let's see if you stick
everything,
around.
Everything, even the messaging, right? So even the messaging that we have seen is messaging that says, baby, give me one more chance.
Mm-hmm. I swear this is the last time. I'll never hit you again. I'm really sorry.
Give me one more chance.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah. So you had to do the cupcakes, but Bulelo's got his own problems this morning.
In his utter trail jacket.
Yeah, we got to talk about this because I know a lot of people have been caught out this way. So it's not really, it's not like a lie, but he's in a Airbnb, right? Which he booked. She booked him. I know. You're laughing because you already know.
Oh, no. I know where this is going. Tell us, Boo.
He thought it was an apartment, a freestanding apartment, separate building, you know, like an apartment or in a block or something where he would be independent. Turns out the place that he booked misrepresents itself, and it's in someone's house.
Yeah. No, I'm inside someone's house as a grown-up.
What do you
now.
Mean? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Inside, like a cottage?
So no. You see, that's what it was presented like that.
Yeah.
Like, and on Airbnb, you can pick whether you want free, like, apartments or whatever. It is what is presented like you're thinking, right? But I have to come through someone's house in order to cut. Yeah, I know. So it's an apartment in the house. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
I hate that.
Imagine.
Unacceptable. You know, if you want to go to the shops, you want to go for a run, you have to use her or his front door the whole time. I'm sorry. It's just not right. You can't. In fact, you shouldn't even be. That should be a whole different category of Airbnb. It's like Airbnb Lite. You know, like if you get an Uber or you get an Uber Black. You know, with an Uber Black, you're going to get a smart car that doesn't stink like someone's been sleeping in it all night. And it's going to be a driver who's got 5 stars and all that kind of shit. There should be this Airbnb Lite where it says to you. Now your feedback has got to be, listen, I'm sorry. You're very nice people. But you're not allowed to advertise that this is an apartment. It's a room in your
house.
And I feel like I've moved back in with the parents.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, and now, but I'm here now. Like, what do I do? The location is exactly what I needed. I'm here for work. It's exactly next to the Cape Town Stadium where I'll be working for the weekend. And like, what do I do? Pick up my stuff now in the rain and go and look for another. So, you know, but I just wish they'd say that you are in a family or in a home.
Yeah,
it just happens that there's a room big enough. And now, but what do? I blame myself. You have to blame yourself. I should have looked better. I'm the problem.
Cindy Sue says, I'm scared of the review that Bulelo will leave these people. Nico says, you have to relocate, MKT. You have to get out of there. You know, this is
so you're there for the weekend?
I'm here for the weekend. I mean, you know, I'm here till Sunday, so who knows? Who knows how I'll. Maybe I just need to go and have my first cup of coffee. I'll go to Giovanni's and have a nice ciabatta and whatever breakfast, and then we'll see how I'm feeling after that. I'll go see Sean Saunders, one of our clients, a little bit later.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll warm to this idea that I just need a bed. But it's lying. It's lying. Is that,
you know, listen, I know people are all trying to make money in this economy, and I get it. And I see some people are offering really great deals, even in, you know, places that perhaps South Africans wouldn't have been able to afford before because the international market would have taken all that money or brought that money, rather. And I don't mind if people try to make their place look really nice on the internet. But it's like these property people, estate agents. You know, you see the photographs and you think, wow, that is a lot of house for a couple of hundred thousand rand. And you go and look at it and you're like, okay, now I can see this is bullshit. But if you're not there, if you don't actually see it in person, because you can take pictures of a place and it can look really impressive, but when you're in it, it can be awful.
Yeah. At which stage is it, you know, advertising, putting your best foot forward, and then just blatant, like Mulelo says, lying?
Well, you're the only one out of the three of us who's actually been in the advertising business. So you tell us where that line is.
Yeah, but that's complete overpromising, right? There's still intrinsics. There's still intrinsics of the stuff that you say. You, like walking through someone's house, that's not freestanding.
No. That should be like top line, because that would put me off, even if it was a beautiful house, even if it was lovely people, that would put me off. I wouldn't want to book it. You want to at least be able to come and go as you wish. You don't want their front door key.
This is what I'm thinking, is if you like went out, Mulelo, and picked up a hot...
Well, can I tell you a story quickly? So when I was still back in the days when I was still DJing, I think this was in somewhere in KZN, I went to this club and I was DJing there that night, and I met this girl there and we kind of hit it off, and she said to me, she'd come back to my place, and I'm like, yes, good. But I'm at an Airbnb. She's like, oh. Anyway, she comes back, and the next morning, because it's now Air Bed and Breakfast, that's what the B&B stands for. The next morning, she's like, I'm going to join you for breakfast. I said, Icon.
Oh, no.
We can't do that.
Oh, no.
It's the family that own the fucking house.
Oh, God.
I can't have you in your clear heels sitting at breakfast.
And your sparkly dress. From
dude. Yeah. Walk of shame was not a thing to her. She was not worried about that. No, she was not. She thought this was something worth celebrating. Oh. She was going to have breakfast with me and the owner of the house. Is this very... lovely, you know, like sort of middle-class Durban family who would have been horrified that I was sitting at the table with a girl who was still in the clothes and definitely smelt like the smoky club of the night before. It was very difficult. I had to negotiate. I had to negotiate very hard with her to get an Uber.
Oh, my God.
And sneak,
really?
And sneak out. She was like, nah, I'm in for breakfast. I'm like, no, you are not. You are not staying for breakfast.
No.
It was horrible.
I'm horrified. No. How dare she? Yeah, but I mean, what happens when those types of situations happen? And I'm puked up. And yeah, what am I?
Well, I mean, listen, not that you're always going to get lucky, but if you do, you would like things to go. Look, it's not even getting lucky. Like, it's just having your own space. And I'm sorry.
I live
on my own like you do, Mbulelo. We're not used to sharing. We're not good at this stuff.
Not only am I not used to sharing, I don't want to share.
No,
do not want to share.
Please look at.
Look at that Tracy message.
Which one?
Oh my
word. What does Tracy say here? I once stayed at a Bosnian's Airbnb in Hobart, Tasmania. Good grief. We also ended up having breakfast with their family. In our bedside table, there were condoms and utility bills.
Not there were. That they were there.
Oh. Oh, God. It was their condoms and their utility bills. We stayed in their room. Oh, my God.
What?
Okay, sorry. I'm so glad you read that properly. So, No.
Jesus.
You see, you're not allowed to do that. Like, Airbnb shouldn't have that as a... You're not allowed to use your own room. And then you, what did they sleep in the children's room?
Oh, my God.
No, man. No.
That's so hectic.
You just hope they change the bed sheets.
That's all you can hope for. Thoughts and
listen,
prayers.
At least with a hotel. I mean, like, you know, I'm sure there are hotels, and I've stayed in some terrible hotels, but I've mostly been happy that the bed was, like, fresh linen and stuff. But if it's someone else's bed, imagine that. They haven't changed the linen. This is where the Bosnian and his wife slept every night. Eyeball.
Yeah.
No, man. See, that's
gosh.
Like, you can't do that. You know, that's not a commercial enterprise. That's you taking huge advantage of customers. Yes.
And you, You know what's happened now is what these people have done is now I'm the nightmare Airbnb person for somebody with an Airbnb.
I know.
I'm definitely calling in. Excuse me, can you send me a photo of where my entrance is?
I know.
Where's your entrance?
And
where
become,
do you do your stuff?
And overnight you become a Karen. See, this is what happens.
Yes, no. Completely. I'm going full on as well.
No. It's not overnight. He's always been. It's just now people are going to experience it more often.
They've unleashed it. You know when you go meet your mother-in-law for the first 2 years of marriage? I was being that guy. You know, you're on your best behavior. You kind of... But now they've shown me that they don't respect
me. Oh, my God.
They've just unleashed me now.
Guys, you know, but I heard a horror story, a real horror story. Someone told me once that they went to an Airbnb and they booked the place online and it looked very nice and all the rest. When they got there were cameras, like security cameras, inside the rooms that they were staying in. And they weren't sure whether these things were on or not. They had to take
what are we talking about now?
Had to take like a Band-Aid, like a plaster, and put it over the camera just in case. Yeah. Because they said, like, there's nothing that they were, you know, they weren't walking around naked or anything. But the fact that these people might be watching was freaky. You can't do that.
I think. Wow. I know that there is a very freaky documentary of that nature, of somebody who had, like, in a hotel, though, camera holes, you know. This is a horror movie. That is, you were in a horror movie, guy.
Do hotels have cameras?
No.
We've seen so many things.
Not in the rooms.
Not in the rooms. You're not allowed to. I mean, in most countries, it would be straight up illegal.
In the passage, not in the room.
You can see people going in and out of their rooms, which might also be, you know, something that people have to think about. That's how they catch a lot of criminals. Why do these things always... This is a good question. Why do these things always happen to you, Mbulelo? It's like your life just forces you to be a Karen. And Anthony says, Mbulelo, seriously, why are you still living in South Africa? You should seriously go and live in Scandinavia, China.
Yeah, I know. I've tried the Scandinavia thing.
Yeah. You've just unleashed the cracker in Bulela. That's great, the cracker in. I love it. I said I would do the valediction for King David in Lynxfield yesterday, and I haven't been I haven't been to that school before. It was really nice to see them having. They had all the matrix there. None of the parents could, because of social distancing and all that stuff, and the halls, you know, can only accommodate this many people or whatever. But it was so great to see. And, you know, I suddenly remembered, like, what it felt like at high school when it was that last formal event at matric. Luckily for them, they've been given the okay on having a matric dance, which they thought they would miss out on. Because last year's matrics obviously didn't have a matric dance. So there's that, which is fun. Things seem to be coming back to normal. But the cool thing is, and I'm always just, I'm fascinated by these kids who get all the awards, you know, the kids who get the, like, the 10 trophies. We had a girl like that at my school, but there was a guy yesterday who got 100% for maths in his prelims. There were a handful, maybe about four or five of their matrics who just cleaned up awards. You know, the language one, the sciences one, the public speaking one. It's just like a broad range of subjects. And I'm always so impressed with that. I seriously, my hat goes off every time to people who can pull off a range of disciplines. Like, you just see those kids are hard working, built for success. It's just incredible. And don't tell me, oh, bullshit, school doesn't give you an idea of what people will be like after school. No. You know, the Duck Scholar at my school, the girl who got all these awards, she became a doctor. She's had two kids. She married a very nice man. She lives in the Western Cape somewhere, and she's got a successful practice. And she's just, like, anyone had told me, oh, she's going to fail and flunk out and she's going to be a disaster because she worked too hard at school. Nonsense. I was such an underachiever at school. I was so average.
What, dude, you say that. One of the trustees on one of the NPCs that we work with. She's a lawyer, and she had 10 distinctions in varsity. So her law degree.
What?
Yeah. Her law degree, 10 bloody distinctions in her first degree, and 3 in her second. I was just like,
amazing.
Listen,
it's amazing.
Doing too much.
But this is why I don't like the way that we've removed distinction in so many places in society. You know, we've taken merit out of the equation. I know this is your thing, Mbulelo, but I know that we've had to try to make, you know, for some kids who maybe aren't as talented academically, for maybe the kids who don't do as well at sport, we have to have some way to make them feel that they are good enough, because they're still going to have to go and be part of society and make a living and, you know, have a meaningful life. And I get that. And I don't want anyone to be excluded. But this whole participation trophy movement, which started under Oprah Winfrey and, you know, even before that with, like, child psychologists who wanted to make everybody feel like they were equal.
Is it Oprah Winfrey?
I think she had a lot to do with it, Jim. You get a prize. Everybody gets a prize. No.
Are you just hating on Oprah because Sia's not here to defend her?
Maybe. maybe that's exactly what's going on. But you know what I mean? Like, I do think that there is something so inspiring. Now, I was never jealous of the kid who got the awards and the girl at my school who cleaned up with all the awards and was such an academic genius, because she really did. She got 90s for everything. And I wasn't jealous of her. I was actually in awe. It didn't – maybe because I've never had an issue with confidence. I don't know what that is. That might have been the way that I was raised. I hope I can give my parents credit. I was never jealous of her, so I was never threatened by her. So when she was getting all these awards – I was kind of proud for her, you know. I didn't feel.
I was very jealous.
I didn't.
And I call them
you
jealous.
Aibo.
Yeah. But no. I have to be honest.
Why were you jealous? Why were you jealous? Why didn't you just work harder?
Because people say that, but I mean, people hate good-looking people. Actually, you hate yourself for not being as good-looking as they are. That's all it
no,
is.
No, but
I wasn't.
But there's a difference.
15.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I talk about this often on the show. How I look in the mirror and I think I could do better, right? And I'm pissed off and sad that I'm not as good-looking.
There's nothing you can do about it.
But there's nothing I can do. What I will not do is I will not hate good-looking people. In fact, I think good-looking people are an essential ingredient to a happy life. You have to have them in your life. Good-looking people make me happier. And I may be jealous of them. I'm not angry with them, though. I don't begrudge them their good looks.
Let me finish. Because I was a shithead, the thing is, I was like, no, I knew deep down inside is that's actually what I should be trying to do. But because I was too lazy and too much of a shithead, I was angry at them for things I couldn't do. It expressed itself as resentment
actually
I was a shithead.
Yeah, but you got to the point now where you can be at least as much self-actualized as someone who can admit that, right? That's a good thing.
Now I love that. In hindsight, I
think just watching the awards last night, it gave me, again, huge inspiration, because I think we've got some brilliant people in South Africa, and no doubt that school is churning out far more than the average school. I mean, they punch well above their weight in terms of every year's matric results. And, you know, the number of kids who got an academic award for having an average over 85 was enormous, enormous. There were a lot of kids who got that kind of score. And I know that there are some schools that just don't have the resources or the teachers or necessarily the support from the parents that they require. But I will say this, is that achievement, whether you're in a good school or a bad school, look, I wasn't in a great school. My school was dead average. In fact, in some ways, it was probably below average. I'm not like walking around telling everybody, oh, I went to Sutherland High School, like it's something I'm proud of. I couldn't care less. It may as well have been any other school, you know. The fact is, even within that environment, you have to have gradations. You have to have something to aspire to if you're in the middle. You have to have something to try and beat yourself at if you're at the top. And at the bottom, you have to have people who are still setting the standard and I'm making it work. Because otherwise, you think your education's worthless. If everybody's on the same level, it just doesn't work. I don't know where this stuff came in. I'm blaming Oprah, which is unfair, but it bothers me that there's still places where we don't have a standard.
I think that there's actually more competitiveness now amongst young people. There's far more competitiveness. So there's definitely a will to change everything. That's why you see like crazy things like the milk carton, milk crate challenge and all of that stuff. Because they're all trying to outdo each other. So one of the things that I've seen over the past couple of years and the amount of pressure that the kids also put on themselves just to be that kid, to be that kid with the like 10 distinctions and where I think we were a little bit like less worried about that stuff.
Maybe.
Dude, that stuff, that things the kids go through now.
Well, Sean says, don't you think the standard has dropped? When we were in matric, no one got close to 100%. Well, people are getting cleverer. But it's an absolute fact that people are getting smarter.
People got, we had people like that. I had people like that in my school.
Yeah.
We had people like that.
Yeah, that's not true at all, by the way. Sorry. Okay.
Sean and I were at stupid schools. You two went to smart school. Oh my God. I know I'm going to get an email from someone who was at my school now saying, oh, how can you say that about your school? I'm not attached to that, the idea that I went to a smart fancy school. I didn't. Very average, very ordinary.
Sorry to hear it,
Yeah, sorry about that.
Like all the kids with the extra lessons now, because everything is so much harder. It's harder to get in because there's so much more competition. So there are fewer spaces in the universities. So everybody is trying to be that top 1%.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think all the extra lessons, all the tutors and support and
I don't know if you saw this. This is a great joke that was going around on social media. You know why Nando's chicken tastes better, right? Because it was raised by two parents.
Right. I thought that was the Woolworths chicken.
might even be. Okay, so a couple of headlines for this morning. We've got things to talk about. I know you want to talk about Dolly Parton, Pumi. We'll come to that in a second.
Yes!
But apparently Squid Games has knocked Bridgerton off the Netflix top spot. So I haven't watched Squid Games yet, Squid Game, but it is a Korean drama. It's watched by 111 million users in its first 28 days. And it knocked Bridgerton off the top spot. So I interviewed Ben Miller from Bridgerton yesterday, and you'll see that interview, I think, on Friday. Ben Miller, famous British actor. He's been in Bridgerton, Professor T, what is it called? Something in Paradise. It's this kind of true crime thing. And he's a terrific actor, just such a nice guy. And I spoke to him yesterday. He really was so much fun to talk to. About 40 minutes we had a chat, and that'll be available tomorrow. But that's just, mentioning him because Bridgerton came up. So apparently Netflix's vice president for content in Korea, Southeast Asia, Australia, and New Zealand says the show's success is beyond our wildest dreams. They told CNN, when we first started investing in Korean series and films in 2015, we knew we wanted to make world-class stories for the core K-content fans across Asia and the world. Today, Squid Game has broken through our wildest dreams. Well, what do you know about this show?
Apart from the fact that the creator tried to sell that script for 10 years before Netflix picked it up.
Isn't that great? Shows you, just keep on keeping on, right?
Yeah, Netflix in Korea will always do a little bit better because it's got a bit more soul than everywhere else.
That is the worst. I thought we'd hit the worst. That's the worst.
I haven't seen anything about it, but I have to watch it because Kanepo keeps telling me, Mom, can I watch Squid Game? So he's not allowed to watch stuff
unless you've
that's
seen
got
it.
Age restrictions. that I haven't seen. So I'm just like,
well, it seems everyone's
everywhere.
So everyone's talking about passwords, or does he just know that he's not allowed to watch? That's an interesting little dynamic there.
He knows he's not supposed to watch.
Okay, so passwords. No passwords though. Oh, no. Okay, interesting. No.
No.
That's very interesting.
He must be honest, and he must. It's about him, right? It's not about me. It's about him. So he must be honest.
That's the German in you coming out.
Yeah. Talk about rubbish. Talk about
that's
school.
Rubbish.
All right. So how about this? Sophisticated multinational criminal gangs with tentacles that span all the way across Africa, Asia, and Europe are behind the upsurge in kidnapping cases, which crime experts and police sources are. This is happening in KwaZulu-Natal. Listen to this. This week, KwaZulu-Natal police, police from that province went to Bloemfontein and arrested two men believed to be behind the kidnapping and extortion of a 60-year-old Durban businessman. The gang...
60?
The gang who had held him hostage for 7 days demanded a ransom of 10 million rand for his release. Police spokesperson Colonel Tembe Gambele said that a multidisciplinary operation has led to the arrest of two 48-year-old kidnappers on Monday. It is alleged that on the 8th of July 2021, a 60-year-old male victim was leaving his business premises in Umgeni Road in Durban when he was accosted by four armed unknown males and forced into their vehicle. This is a very scary story. So police seized...
But who gets kidnapped? My mom used to tell me about stories on the continent, and generally it was always if you're into something a little saucy in terms of business, you're not doing the QuickBooks for a sewing company. Who are these people that get kidnapped? Like, what are you doing?
Well,
They must know something about you if they're also asking for 10 million. They're not kidnapping me for 10 million.
Well,
trust me.
Yeah. They know that if they kidnap any of the three of us, they're not going to get 10 million, that's for sure.
No.
So apparently last month they arrested two men who were believed to be a kidnap for ransom gang targeting foreign nationals. The two men that were arrested had kidnapped a 24-year-old Indian national from a parking lot in the Durban CBD and held him hostage before ransoming or demanding a ransom from his family. The gang was highlighted for the first time when Durban businesswoman Sandra Moon Sammy was kidnapped from the side of the road in Pinetown in May of 2019. She was held for more than 6 months before the police... before the police tracked her down to a house in Imalahleni in Mpumalanga.
Wow. So wait, all these names sound Indian as well.
Is there
something going on there?
Yeah, there's another one. Here's a high-profile case. Mohammed Noor Karim, who's the owner of Giant Sweets and Sweets for Africa, he remains missing. When he was kidnapped back in 2019, they still haven't found him. There are claims that the ransom had been paid to the kidnappers after a demand of 20 million rand was made. Neither the police nor the family have confirmed this.
Good God.
The heads of these syndicates sometimes sit in India or Pakistan, but even in Europe. The reason they often target foreigners is that they know many of these businessmen prefer to deal with cash, and they don't like banking all their money. So that's interesting.
Michael, who's this good cop? One of my colleagues was arrested for kidnapping. I was about to tell you all a story.
Yes. Yeah, the police.
Tell y'all a story about a neighbor of mine.
Tell me. Tell us.
Yeah. So he was arrested with a group of people. I think there were like four or five of them for kidnapping a child for ransom in the south of Joburg. And I couldn't for the life of me. And he is somebody I know very, very well, somebody I grew up with. And I was just like, dude, what happened here? And his story, which he's stuck to this day, and he did the time and everything, is guy so-and-so, somebody else we know, asked me for a ride. He was just like, he has to go pick up a kid down in Naturena or something, one of those southern suburbs. He was like,
oh my God,
give me a ride, I just need to go pick up this kid. He went with him, drove him, they picked up the kid, and he drove them, dropped them off. He didn't know it was a kidnapping.
Oh, wow.
He didn't know.
Oh, my God.
Holy smokes. That's so bad if true.
Unbelievable.
Which happens, right? Which happens in the hood. Like back then, where if somebody has a car, you're like, dude, I need a ride. Can you like hook me up? I'll give you some cash to like drive me there. And like before there was Uber and stuff. That was his story to this day. This is the story that he has maintained to this day. Turns out, kidnapping.
Ricey Beck says, I know a rich guy from my town who was kidnapped. When he was freed, he moved to Australia. Well, that would make you want to go. I mean, I kind of get that. Audrey says, Beth, the ending raised more questions for me, but there has to be a follow-up because Beth was saying just a little bit earlier. Let me just see where this is. Pumi, I think you won't allow him to watch it. It's quite gory. That's to do with Squid Game.
Squid Games.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Carl says, do not let your kid watch Squid Game. Some adults shouldn't even be watching it. That's what Carl says.
Everything I've read about it makes me feel like this ain't going to be, it's not a good idea. He's too small.
Mm. Oh, my God. My partner
kidnapped.
Tina Turner's Carve says, my partner was once kidnapped in Nigeria when he was there working for an oil company. Scary times. Yeah, that happens in Nigeria a lot, but now it seems like it's happening here as well. That's very worrying.
Oh,
no, it's, see, it happens every day.
Don't always.
See, the Turner's Calves, that story can't just
but
end there.
Notice,
that story can't just end there.
Notice that this is one of the perils of being rich. No. Like we always talk about, oh, wouldn't it be great to win the lottery? Oh, wouldn't it be great to be a millionaire? Oh, wouldn't it be great to have a business that was worth millions and millions? Well, there's a downside. You've got a target on your back.
Who's the famous Instagram? There's some Instagram chick who married a high-profile guy, and she was posting too much. Simpiwa told me about it. I don't know what the lady's name is. Anyway, so she was posting too much, and he said to her, no, stop posting on social media that we married and we're living that Dubai life, right? And I imagine maybe this was part of the reason, you know, is he doesn't need this kind of stuff out there. He's successful, but he's behind the scenes. You know, it's like you don't see Adrian Gore posting he's probably got a yacht or whatever. Hey, you don't see him posting that. Like nobody in Dubai knows who he is. He just up there or whatever.
Hey, guys.
You're hectic.
Still one of my all-time favorite Denzel Washington movies, Man on Fire. Freaks me out. I think I've watched it like 4 times. Every time I watch it, it freaks me out that is a true story.
Wow. I've got to move on with another headline, and this is someone who's going to be joining us a little bit later. The Congress of the People, COPE, yes, believe it or not, there's still a thing, COPE. Their mayoral candidate for Johannesburg, Colleen Makubele, who's going to be on the Burning Platform later on, so I'm glad we can see someone from COPE on the show this morning. She said government could not expect citizens to bear the burden of resolving the service debt issue in places like Soweto. She insists government has failed to create jobs, provide adequate services, and maintain infrastructure. She held a media briefing on Wednesday where she shared her vision for the metro ahead of the upcoming local government elections. And Makubele said her party believed government must provide a cross-subsidization model to ensure the delivery of basic services to residents. What do you think of that, Pums? I mean, your parents still live in Soweto.
Dude, it has become an electioneering tool. This, we can do something. I think after the Cyril Ramaphosa getting booed out of certain parts, I think after that incident, people think it's going to be like, it's going to win them the Soweto votes if they say, we're going to do something about the debt. Ah, it's just an electioneering tool. There's nothing they can do about it. The reality is that there is debt because people aren't working.
Yeah. Yeah, no other way to put
it. People aren't working.
Yeah.
You know, you could scrap all that debt tomorrow. You could scrap the debt for every municipality all over the country. It's not going to do, a year from now, we're going to be back here.
Yeah.
We sat here and listened to Leato last week tell us about like an 80% unemployment rate in Welkom. You could scrap all the debt in Welkom. A year from now, you're going to be back at the same place. That's not the problem.
We've tried as citizens, and even then, so we've tried as citizens to pay the debt for everyone, not just Soweto. It's called the taxes, which you stole. Just give you a little highlights package for the 500 billion you stole in the PPE stuff. Is we've tried to subsidize the country. So don't. In fact, it's not actually the residents in Soweto. We can get to that. Is we've tried as citizens to subsidize. You stole the money that you should have been paying that back with. So we stop talking about it like we don't know what happened.
Correct. It's nonsense.
We tried.
Now listen. Next week we start recording season 6 of Blind History. I still can't believe we're up to season 6. It's an award-winning series. I love doing it. My co-host is with us this morning. His name is Anthony Miedera. Hey, Ant, how are you?
Morning. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear
going
you
strong.
Loud and clear.
Loud and clear.
Morning, Pumi. Morning, Mbelela. Gareth, how are you?
Good. I brought you on this morning not to talk about Blind History because I know you're doing your research for next week when we record our first episode of the new season.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, me too. I can't believe we've got to 6 seasons of this and you know, people have been on my case about when is the next one coming. So that I had to get that out of the way right up front. But I'm actually bringing you on this morning to talk about something else, which is something you're very passionate about, and it's something that you've been working on behind the scenes for a little while now, and many people may already know about it because we've been producing it with you, but it's called Blind Conservation. Obviously, the play on blind, which is, you know, you're the company for which you're the MD, Taylor Blinds and Shutters, but conservation is a big thing to you, and you can tell us in a moment how you got involved in it and what your interest there is. But I just want to remind people, if you don't already know this, there's a 4-part documentary series about conservation, which we've launched on cliffcentral.com. It's called Blind Conservation, and they've focused the episodes on apex predators. The first 2 episodes look at sharks, and we talked to Anthony about that. And I think we've spoken about sharks even on this show before. But if you haven't listened to those, you need to listen to them immediately. And then there is a 2-part lion story in the series. Now, you told me just a little bit about these lions when I saw you last time at our offices. And these amazing stories about these 2 prides of lions and all the different families of lions that we have in South Africa. And people have been studying them for years. But how did you get involved in... And how did you get interested in conservation? Is it a lifelong passion?
Well, as I mentioned before, it was from our side, I've always been interested in it. And I think I joined the Sharks Board, which is on the reverse side, you know, having shark nets to protect humans, which is crazy. So, but I joined that for the passion of sharks. And I've always loved all types of all different types of wildlife. If we have to consider Africa, and I'm very passionate about Africa and the people and the animals, and if we in South America, you might see a jaguar, but it's very rare, and you've got to be very rich to get to those places.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not something you can do every day. And the same in America with the mountain lions. When are you ever going to see an interaction with a mountain lion? A cougar, 100%.
So, cougar.
The cougar, yeah. Or maybe you see them in LA.
I don't know anymore, but it used to be at Billy the Bum.
Yeah, or the shark leaning against the lamppost in Santa. But we can go to our national parks. Any one of us can go into the national parks, and you can see. I suppose it's a bit of luck, but if you time it right and you're lucky, you can see a leopard killing an impala or a lion killing a wildebeest, and you can actually see the interaction, and it's something that's really special, and I'm very proud of it, and we must be proud of it, and we must protect that heritage, but also the people around it. You know, there's a lot of people that are supporting our wildlife and it provides massive employment. So it makes so much sense to try and support it. And apex predators, lions are just incredible. I mentioned to you, in the last time I chatted about this, the humanizing, you know, a lion is a lion. So it's very difficult to actually humanize it. But they always say, you know, a lion doesn't say, he needs to tell you he's a lion. If we look at it and we humanize it a little bit, so there's the Mapochos. So the Mapocho is security company in, I think in the Gauteng region, or mainly in the Gauteng region.
I remember them.
I'm not sure if they're going anymore.
Amatamaha. I remember them. They were
scary guys. You know, when you're the crooks, these guys are after you. You're really shitting yourself. So they named this pride of lions around 2003, 2004. They named this pride of lions the Mapochos, and there were six. So the male lions they usually get together as brothers or cousins, and they build a coalition, two or more male lions, and then they have a territory and they have their females and they mate with the females and they look after their cubs. And any cub that's not part of them, they kill.
Yeah.
So, and it's extremely territorial and it's very, very hard to be a lion. And so the male lions work very hard. They just see them lying under a tree sleeping for 12 hours, but at night they can walk up to 16 kilometers. So these Mapochos, there were six of them, and they were extremely big lions, and it's the most incredible sight you can see to see these six big lions. But interacting with them and the way that they totally ruled a certain section of Kruger Park, being the Swabi Sands area, which is on the west, they killed over 100 lions themselves in protecting their territories.
Wow.
And they had names. They had names. You know, like my computer passwords. Some of their names. It's the one was Kinky Tail, aka Shaka. Then you had Mr. T, aka Satan. You had Pretty Boy. You had Rasta. And then you had Makula Mapocho. So those, and there were six. One was a cousin and five brothers. And they absolutely ruled with an iron fist. Any male that tried to sniff around in the area, they killed him.
Wow.
And they ate him.
Yeah.
So it's on YouTube. You can go on YouTube with, it's called Blood Brothers. And I must be honest, it's quite hard to watch that. But I explained a little bit about it in the podcast, and where there was another massive lion coalition building big young males in the eastern part of Swabi Sands. And now the Mapochos didn't like it. So they ran off to go and attack them, and nonetheless, that's where Blood Brothers comes from. And it's an incredible story of male lions and how they protect their females, protect their cubs, but then if it's any other lions, they'll kill. But those type of things are, and you know, a lot of business people and
what the hell was that?
That was under my desk.
Get the kitty litter going there.
Yeah, exactly.
So podcast, tell that thing on a podcast.
Incredible. So I'm just.
But
I'm blown away by the story. I don't want you to spoil the story for anybody, because you know you go into some of this in Blind Conservation, but it's also in Blood Brothers, which is a great documentary. The Mapochos eventually went to war with this other pride of lions. And, you know, it's sad, obviously, because nature is way harder than humans can handle. And it's also tremendously inspiring, because it shows you just the majesty of these creatures and the way that survival of the fittest is still the only rule that matters out there in the wild. It's an incredible story. You told me the story in the office. I still haven't forgotten it. How did you guys approach Blind Conservation with two episodes about lions?
So what we try to do is look at different areas. So we have to look at both sides. You've got to manage life, the wildlife. So if we look at elephants as an example, they're just exploding because their natural habitat's shrinking.
Mm.
And so what do you do? Because then it destroys the greater Kruger area is getting destroyed. So how do you manage that? So you have to understand that you've got to manage the wildlife and you've got to manage the human side. So if we look at the leopards in the Western Cape, if a leopard gets into a sheep pen, it's that red blood veil goes over its eyes and it can kill 40 sheep.
Yeah.
Not that it can eat the 40 sheep, but it'll kill all 40. So now the farmer, I mean, how much is that worth to the farmer? So he's absolutely cross. He shoots the leopard. So So you have to manage that side of it with maybe Anatolian sheepdog. So what we try to do in blind history, we try to paint that blind conservation, apologies, we try to paint a picture on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So we spoke to some, you know, some really incredible people that are passionate about lions. We spoke on the other side to hunters that understand the conflict, and we try to just paint a very objective picture of both sides of the story.
Amazing. And I'm really happy that this is one of your passion projects that you're actually involved in, like, shark conservation. You're very personally and you're a stakeholder in that world. Explain how you got involved in that.
You're actually from the first blind conservation we did with sharks. You know, we interviewed specialist shark marine biologists. And there's a product that's been developed which looks like kelp.
Mm.
And sharks don't really like to swim in kelp. So, you know, it's not really great for them. If they have to go in, they will, you know. So that's already a deterrent. And then we're putting magnets in there. Well, they've got very, very sensitive feelings in their noses, the ampullae of Lorenzini in their noses. So they feel that energy, and they don't like it.
Mm.
And it's such a better natural way of protecting. You don't kill the dolphins. You don't kill the turtles. You don't kill the smaller sharks, any of that, with this technology. And that, it's so much better than a net barrier, because it's just a net. A shark net is basically fishing, and you will eliminate the big predators. As the same with a bait hook, you know, you put a bit of whale meat in a bait hook, you're going to catch a big shark. So it's at least this thing is where humans can use the sea without the fear of interacting. Well, that's a very small chance. Without the fear of being bitten by a shark. So that's the technology we're involved in.
How are our shark populations looking in South Africa? Because that's not something I know a huge amount about.
Yeah, look, it's like globally, it's a sad story. I mean, at the great whites, we don't see great whites in False Bay anymore.
Hmm.
You can swim around Seal Island with a piece of whale meat on your back and you won't be touched.
Oh my
5
God.
Years ago, wow. There would be nothing left of you. So there's a lot that's going on. There's overfishing of the smaller sharks, but there has been the great news. There's also the great news is there's pressure being done, being put on government, and there's some changes that have been made. So especially on the long line fishing, on the bottom fishing of sharks. So and I'm just hoping those type of things you can just try. And try and solve a shark-free chips campaign, because our friends in Australia eat our sharks.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
I mean, can't they eat their own sharks? So it's, so what happens? They're so strict there and organised that they don't allow that to happen. But what we do is we just ship all the shark meat to them, and they eat flake and chips. They call it flake. So there's a campaign that's been run in Australia as well to try and understand, you know, where you're getting the sharks from. And it's important, because they're very strict in terms of protecting that, but we're not. So there's a lot involved, and it's a global problem.
I love, and Dogos is actually referring to this now, what technologies are being used to manage blind conservation projects. Have you heard of connected conservation? I mean, you mentioned those new nets, which you're very involved in now. But are there other things that we can do? Are there ways that ordinary people can get involved?
So I think there's a lot of different organizations involved around wildlife. And so we just need to understand it, first of all, because and make sure that we're dealing with reputable people. There's so many rhino, like with the rhinos, Rhino 911. There's so many cat conservation organizations we can join. Unfortunately, because there's so many different problems, there's quite a lot of different organizations. But but I think the big thing is to communicate, and first of all to try and understand it, to educate, and then and the big thing for us in education is like the Anatolian sheepdog. Leopards hate them, so they won't go anywhere near it. There's no conflict because they know that the sheepdog is there, and then they don't go and kill 40 sheep.
Right.
So it's educating, you know, the people that are really involved in the conflict, and then also creating employment. But it's a long story. So this is what, you know, just on this blind conservation, we try and communicate it a little bit more. I try and, you know, add some stories because it's always a lot. I think it's more fun and a little bit of humanizing it. So, you know, the Mapochos weren't, they didn't have an ego. Like, you know, when I paint the picture of these six big males, you know, dominating, the lions don't have an ego. They great whites don't have an ego. It's all about energy saving. The minute they see that they're going to lose the battle in terms of getting a seal or in terms of getting a wildebeest, they back off and they accept that they're not going to get it. But it's quite nice to talk about that because humans are very much ego driven and this person dominates that person. And it's nice to tell the stories in a little bit of a different way.
I'm very excited to introduce people to Blind Conservation if they haven't heard any of it yet, but it's a four-part documentary series about conservation in South Africa. The first two episodes are about sharks. The second two about lions. You don't want to miss those. You can find them all on cliffcentral.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And the host, Anthony Miedra. Very, very good to have you on, Ant.
Good. Thanks very much. Great to be on.
Lovely to see you. Very, very good. Nice. That's something to look forward to, and it's available right now. So get it on cliffcentral.com. Heading up towards 7 o'clock. Coming up in the burning platform this morning. Hello. Is that you, Mbulelo? Is that the people you live with?
No. That's not me. I'm inside someone's house, obviously, because I'm a small child. But no, yeah. It's not me.
Okay. Well, coming up, the burning platform with Pumi Mashiko and I, and we will be joined this morning by Dr. Makwasi Khoza, who we love to talk to. And we've also got the mayoral candidate for COPE in Johannesburg, Colleen Makubele. Of course, Makwasi Khoza is standing for mayor of eThekwini in the Action SA party. I can't wait to see her and to catch up with her. We'll speak to her just in a little while.
Tell her about the kidnappings.
Yeah.
Well, that's not good. And well, deal with that.
We'll see if we can find out about that too. Colleen Makubele and Makwasi Khoza joining us in the burning platform, which is coming up next. This is CliffCentral.com. Good Thursday morning. CliffCentral.com.